Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast series right here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Right here today in studio at 1285 Avenue of the Americas in New York. Glad to welcome back for his second in-studio appearance with us. It's been a couple of years, but Jan, it's great to have you back. We have Jan Van Eck, the Chief Executive Officer of Van Eck. And Jan is joining us for a very timely discussion on the current market and macro environment. This will include perspective into monetary policy, tariffs, and we'll also spend some time on investment themes and, of course, positioning ideas. So with that, Jan, great to have you back here in studio. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our listeners and our clients. It's great to be at the table with you today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So plenty of topics we want to hit on with our listeners, maybe beginning with U.S. trade policy tariffs, being mindful that that topic has driven so much of the economic, the market outlook here in 2025. Now, following the recent U.S. Federal Appeals Court ruling just a few weeks ago, Jan, how do you anticipate that U.S. trade policy might evolve from here?
Well, I think the tariffs and trade policy are important to me because they affect our fiscal policy. When I look forward to 2035 and I say, look back at 2025, what are some of the biggest things that we're going to be remembering? And one is certainly that we're coming off the biggest spending spree in U.S. history at 6.5% of federal budget deficit of GDP. I think that is trending down. And one of the reasons it's trending down, or one of the main reasons actually, is, you know, the tax that is tariffs, right? That's generating maybe $300 to $400 billion extra a year. So that to me is the biggest effect on the economy and the markets. It'll mean a slowdown in the economy, which I think we've been seeing a little bit, but it's really good for the long-term fiscal health of the U.S. Now, I think we're a little bit more optimistic than most in terms of the shrinkage of the budget deficit. I look at it, actually, the clock starts tomorrow, which is fiscal year 2026, October 1st. And I think we'll be down in the 5.5% to 4.5% of GDP, because this year, this last year, obviously had both the Biden and Trump administrations. You can't really, it's not a clean look. So we'll see.
Now, with respect to D.C. legislation, back in July, we did see that the One Big Beautiful Bill was signed into law. As we look ahead towards 2026, what kind of economic impact may we see from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Trump policies have been, obviously, he wants to stimulate the economy through the lower taxes and wants to attract businesses to the United States. So it's a very simple goal. And we wake up, well, I would say we wake up once a day, but probably several times a day, to headlines that are basically supporting that theme of reshoring and economic growth. And I think the bill per se, remember what was missing out of that, again, was the tariff revenue. Mm-hmm. So I think if you combine the tariff revenue in, it was probably relatively responsible.
So with respect to your thoughts on D.C. legislation, U.S. trade policy, how might that translate to expectations for the health of the U.S. economy as we're making our way through the balance of 2025 into 2026, and any concerns over the prospects of a recession to occur?
I think that's a right question. Again, if you're cutting government spending, that will slow the economy, but I don't see it pushing us into sort of a deep recession, meaning two negative quarters of GDP growth. So I think we'll slow down, but even that we just got the Q2 data and actually surprised everyone to the upsides, because that's one of the things, but the bottom line today is I think you have to stay fully invested because there's so many counter trends happening at the same time. So you do have the slowdown that comes from fiscal deficits, but you have this AI boom, mm-hmm. that's just incredible. And so I think if we were to have a slowdown, I wouldn't worry about it. It wouldn't be an investable slowdown, let me put it that way. The where you want to, I think, shift your portfolio is when the Fed is slamming on the brakes, and that does not seem to be happening anytime soon.
What is your outlook for monetary policy coming off of that 25 basis point cut back in September? We're recording here on September 30th. We do have the next labor report coming out in a few days. I'm sure the Fed will be keeping an eye on that very closely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Fed is sort of important, but I think that's what's really dominating the markets is this big debt overhang that we have. And I think that's what's driving a lot of investment behavior, namely the rise in gold prices, that people want diversification away from the dollar deficits. And I think the trade uncertainty and the Ukraine war uncertainty that's really setting the tone in Europe is making for a lot of demand for gold globally. Just to set some global context, because you asked about the Fed, the world, the developed market countries have been cutting interest rates over the last several years. So the U.S. is kind of a laggard.
Like
our rates are higher in a way, but I think that's okay. That's not hurting our economy so much these days. But that's so we do have room to cut. I think it won't change this multi-year, like decade-long trend of diversification away from the dollar.
With respect to artificial intelligence, you brought that up a few moments ago. It is a notable theme of ours here at the UBS Chief Investment Office. What are your thoughts on the current impact to U.S. economic activity as well as the potential future impact?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have anything new to say other than I think I would put a pin in 2025 when AI really became, with their reasoning models and their applications every day, that we can use it and really enhance our own productivity. It's also become sort of like a social media app, like we develop friends with our AI, which is kind of scary, right? But downloads of chat are higher than some of the social media apps. And, you know, that's not something I'm doing, but it's an interesting, so that's new. And then the whole shift in the business world from, it used to be Google search bar, search engine optimization, getting people to click on your website. Now that's not it. It's basically feeding data into these AI crawlers. So all those, social media dimension, the business marketing dimension, and the daily use and work into our work lives, is all changing in this year, right? It really wasn't true a year ago.
It seemed to have come out of nowhere when you really think about it. The last time you were joining us here at the table, we were not talking about artificial intelligence, and here we are.
Right. And NVIDIA's vision is just incredible and aligning with these hyperscalers. And obviously, I think what's happening is the separation between the China ecosystem and the U.S. ecosystem. I would also put in that, kind of things that have happened in 2025.
Yeah, mindful of the market impact, the introduction of some of these cheaper models out of China had earlier this year, that was something to note.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's global competition. I mean, Alibaba, I think, is going to be one of the hyperscaler winners. Mm-hmm. Just to point out that it is a global world.
And then outside of artificial intelligence, any other investment themes that are top of mind for you at the moment?
Well, we've been playing what we call AI 2.0 in 2025. So, semiconductors ran a lot last year. And needed to cool off at the beginning of the year. But what we are looking at is like what's going to happen with this need for energy. Mm-hmm. So nuclear power has been the theme that we've been talking about. Some of the Bitcoin miners have pivoted right towards using their energy assets for the hyperscalers. So, those are some of the themes. And I mean, I think it's probably overdone at this point, but you can't not enjoy it, but you don't want to sell everything, but you realize that there's going to be a correction here at some point.
And then just looking across asset classes, where are you seeing the most opportunity at the moment? Any best ideas?
I think there's nothing that's particularly distressed, probably, except for the energy area. We would probably sit on our hands for another year as far as that's concerned. I think where a lot of investors, and this is where I think Van Eck and UBS align, is, but not the whole market, is not sufficiently allocated to gold. I mean, gold really should be a major part of many portfolios. And I think this, what we see is that this is early stages. Investor interest in gold is just not that high yet. You don't see that high inflows into bullion. We had redemptions out of our gold mining ETFs. I think that was short covering, but we don't see big inflows. So if you want to say that U.S. wealth demand is at low levels, then you've still got a ways to go.
So no concern about the current price point.
I don't know. It's hard. I mean, it's got momentum on its side. You want markets to correct, but I just think what you see globally is, you know, sort of 15 years ago, the developed markets like Switzerland and France and everyone were selling their gold. Mm-hmm. And now over the last decade or 5 years at least, you've seen developed countries like China, they're getting wealthier, India, they're buying more gold. We don't see that trend changing. And I think when the world looks around and says, I want to own, you know, kind of a global asset, they don't want to own any more dollars. Mm. And foreign central banks now own more gold than they do U.S. treasuries. Mm. And I think that's going to continue because they're not going to buy the yen or the renminbi or the Indian rupee or the euro. And we know gold is that bearer asset, and it's not going anywhere. And they can buy it in scale.
Some very interesting considerations when it comes to gold. And we've covered a lot of topics in a short period of time before we close out. Any final thoughts, takeaways, or anything you would want to reinforce to our audience?
I think I'm very enthusiastic about India for the next 10 years. That's targeted to be the size of Europe. And then we don't have time for it, but I think the stablecoin legislation that happened in the summer is the third most important piece of bank regulation in U.S. history, because for the first time, tech companies don't need a banking license, right? Mm-hmm. They can be in the payments. And so you see all these huge tech companies getting involved, even, cloud companies. So it's that's just worth noting in 2025.
Well, that lends itself to a follow-up conversation. It would be great to have you back at some point, Yondo. Thank you for dropping by the studio today, spending some time with our listeners, clients, and covering all of the ground that you did for us.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.